Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
We go Ned, David, Pete. So one,
two,
three,
four,
five,
six,
seven,
eight,
nine.
God, a bit ponderous that.
I know.
But it'll help. It'll help. Anyway, it's very nice to see you both on a Zoom link. And Pete, it's noticeable that David's background is just exactly the same as I've been staring at for 3 years, but your background's different, Pete. Tell us about where you are.
I wanted to change it up a bit, so I thought I'll head into the lounge.
Into the West Wing.
Into the West Wing, the right wing, the right west?
East.
Yeah, let's go with west.
Let's go with west. Sorry, I'm on the right-hand side of the house.
So the right wing.
Simplify it.
Not the wrong wing.
Yeah, just thought I'd make myself comfy, change it up a bit, got the Christmas decorations up.
You totally have, yeah. When did we caught a glimpse
of
the tree, Pete.
Pod. Yeah. So we usually, well, actually, Lauren corrected me because we have done in the past, put the tree up in November. I mean, way back in the past because I'd go on training camps. So we want to do it as a family together. But we had friends coming over this weekend. So we're like, right, let's make it festive. Let's get all the trees up. So we've got one in the hall, one in the kitchen, and one where I'm sat now in the lounge.
That's great, Pete.
Very good.
So we're right into it. Yeah, we're fully committed. No turning back now.
How many of them are real?
None of them.
Nice. Nice.
But so I've
got these little scents that you hang on that smell like real trees. Brilliant. But it's... We never have been, and we never will be into real trees. There's too much mess involved, and
you could hang car rear view mirror pine tree things off them.
Oh, that would be meta, wouldn't it? Pine tree hanging off a pine tree. Yeah,
that would be meta.
Yeah, I think you're right, Pete. I think you're doing the right thing, actually. Well, it depends. Do you chuck them away at the end of the year? Because if you do that, you're doing the wrong thing. But do you keep them for the next year?
So, well, we. Every Christmas we add something new, so it's just like an ever-growing sort of, our attic is just getting like more and more consumed by Christmas decorations. But this tree here is the first tree we ever bought, which is where Santa comes and where all the kids come in the morning. And then we've added the one in the hall. And then last year we added the one in the kitchen, which is actually the biggest one we have, which is epic. And because it's the newest one as well, it's literally like three pieces and you just put it in it. It just sort of like... just pops out and it's like wow, and it's got the lights
amazing.
It's got the light built into the tree as well because everyone knows
built into the tree
from back in the day. You put the lights on, it's like I'm gonna have to do it again, and you have to untangle them all because one side isn't covered and the other side is, and so
yeah
nice.
Well, Pete, when I was a kid back in the day, when you put the lights on the tree, I don't know what's changed technologically, but if one of the bulbs had blown, the whole lot was dead, sort of thing. Okay. So the whole lot wouldn't come on. So yet there'd be this moment of tension. Dad would always put the lights around the tree like that, which like took him a really long time. But you didn't know whether it was all going to go wrong until he flicked the switch to see if they would all light up. But invariably, they wouldn't light up. So it was just dead. The whole lot was dead. And then he'd have to go through every single bulb and hold it up to the light to see which one had a filament that had blown.
Those were the days.
It was like,
that's what
I remember that as well.
But you didn't Happy have anything days. Better to do anyway, because you didn't have the internet. There was so much dead time. There was so much dead time.
There's a moral behind that story, though.
Yeah.
When we were putting the tree up in here, and Lauren got the lights wrong. I was like, why is... Because this tree isn't the best tree. And I was like, why is this a special tree? And then the first thing that came to my head was because...
Tree.
Was because, one... We had the music videos from, you know, the music channel on Sky on with the old school videos on instead of the speaker in the kitchen. So that straight away, that's more traditional, more nostalgic. Then the light thing happened where Lauren had to do it all again. And I was like, well, that's exactly why.
That's Christmas.
It's all part of the process. That's what makes it special. That's what sticks in your memory from when you were a kid. You know, the music videos, the what you just explained with the...
With the lights. The bulb
exactly. All these little...
But even now with like better lights, I mean, built-in lights is obviously a different level, but like with conventional lights for normal people, you've always... Everyone's got the Christmas tree against at least one wall. Sometimes it's in a corner, so it's against two walls. And so you're like, by definition, you're a lot of those lights you're just displaying to a wall, and they're not actually on show at all because they're just around the back of the tree. And that always gives me a momentary kind of pause for like existential crisis when I'm doing that. I think, is there really any point in doing this? Why don't I just cram them all on the front side of the tree, which is the only bit that no one, you know, everyone sees?
Yeah, I think no, more often than not.
Well, that's like just shaving the front of your legs.
Yeah.
It's like you wouldn't do it. You don't see the. I mean, I don't see the back of my legs really. But you've
always got to
be
tactical with the baubles, though. Yeah. Like the best ones go on display, and then you kind of fill up around the side, and then you have more often than not the back of the tree will have maybe one, two, you know, a couple on, but it won't be full like the front.
But would you be tempted to take some of your very best baubles and put them not on your best tree? Because you've obviously got a pecking order of trees. You've got your massive tree, and then you've got your second best tree and your third best tree. But just to even it out a bit, would you put a really like top class bauble on the worst tree?
No, because every tree is like decorated differently and has a different style. So the one in the hall is like a fun tree, and it's like all more traditional greens, yellows, reds. We've got like a pack of cards on there that we got from Glasgow Worlds. Crazy sort of decorations. This one has got like these. One sec, I'm going to grab it over now. Like how pretty is that? Can you see that?
It's beautiful.
Oh, that's... Is that a little soldier or a little...
It's just gorgeous. It's also got the one sec, bear with me. Fill time if you need, because it's tangled up. The gold post box from the Olympics.
Look at that.
The
golden door with 2012 above it and a little kind of like Christmas wreath on the golden door. That's amazing, Pete.
So this is very much the special.
The gold tree.
It's got the mine and Lauren's first angel, which is gold at the top as well.
It's all gold.
Yeah.
A golden key.
So this is a really good opportunity for me to drop in and ask Sneg question, actually. Because we're just going to jump in now, because it seems like such a pristine moment.
But I did get the impression, David, that we could have talked...
David.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did get the impression we could have talked to Pete about his Christmas trees for like the full pod.
Pete got up, moved camera around and got up like somebody in a documentary about to talk us through. So Gav at Gavinius,
it's a lot of love,
asks, is Pete an annoying younger brother or an accidental genius?
Can he be both?
Yeah.
Can he be? But he's not. I don't think I've ever been annoyed by Pete Kenyuk.
Oh, just, you know, he has his flashes.
No, I don't know. I don't think annoyed would be the right word.
No, I've been frustrated.
Like, that's not the right
perplexed
word. You see,
I've disappointed.
Disappointed. Oh my God. I've been from time to time. I've been a little surprised by Pete. I'll grant you that. Like, I genuinely don't think Pete's just not one of those people. See, I think annoying people aren't as charismatic as Pete's.
No,
annoying
that's true.
People are just like a rainy, drizzly Wednesday afternoon of a person.
Yeah.
Whereas Pete is like midnight on a Monday, or he's like a Saturday afternoon in bright sunshine. He's like all sorts of interesting days of the week. He's not just a drag of a Wednesday afternoon type person, you know. So he's obviously a genius. We've covered that for the last couple of years on the pod. That goes without explaining. My younger brother, my young kid, he's kind of stepson. I don't feel directly related to him, so it's definitely stepson vibes. And also, I would like to feel
no genetic references.
And I'd like to feel I could disassociate myself instantly if I had to.
His face. Yeah, well, thanks,
but
Gav.
Never annoyed. That was a great never question. Annoyed. That was a great question. That was a really good opener. That
so, yeah, Pete, yeah. your turn. Fine. So I've got 9 pages of questions, so we'll go through what we can.
Oh, my God.
I noticed you just sort of like went in quite random there, David. We're
I
not
did.
Going.
Just no, dipped in. Lucky dip.
Dipped in.
Lucky dip it.
Dip
it
in
okay,
out.
I'm going to go lucky for the first question yeah. on, right. on your sort of... Yeah. Yeah. And it's from Ross Jeffries. If anyone wants Hello, to give Ross. Him a cheeky little follow on Twitter, he's at South Coast Ross. So, Ned,
South Coast Ross.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Hi, South Coast Ross.
Who, in your opinion, is the biggest, excuse my language, bastard in the current crop of pro cyclists?
Well, this is... Ross, South Coast Ross must have been to see my last show, I think, because I did quite a riff on, like, you can't win the Tour de France unless you're a bastard of some description. And it started in 1903 with Maurice Garin, who was a famous bastard. But it continues to this day with Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome, both of whom, in their own, you know, different bastard. Ways, are total bastards. But I think, and here's where I have to hold my hand up about my completely hopeless prediction with regards to Jonas Vingegaard. I think he's a bit... I got him wrong completely, and I think he actually, it's between him and old Primoz, because I think they're both like, but actually it's Primoz, isn't it? Primoz. I think the Vuelta kind of revealed that a little bit.
That was a huge reveal. That was a huge
that
reveal.
That was a big one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
David, do you think Sepp Kuss is a bastard? He's won a Grand Tour, so.
Well, he has to be now, doesn't he?
He's won
a Grand Tour. He had to be, yeah. I hope he's earned some bastardness.
We have to recreate with a bit of AI the Inglourious Bastards, a few of those scenes with pro cyclists.
Yeah, that's a great film, that.
Yeah. Sepp Kuss just going into the theatre with a machine gun, and it's just filled with Jumbo Visma riders. Yeah.
Because Jonas and Primoz, based on that, would be like the German dude who's, I can't remember his name now. And then you've got the American Italian who's Brad Pitt. Yeah. And their crew, they'd be like the G's and the Pagachas, wouldn't they, who are trying to, like, you know, do them over, basically.
Yeah. But Jonas is like one of those characters from a film who you'd consistently underestimate, as I've just proven, you know, and actually he'd turn out to be the most devious of them all and, like, the really, the, like, super evil.
Right, let's keep moving. This is from Mel Griffiths at
Hello, Dame Mel Griffiths.
Nelly Melly. You're casting a potential blockbuster film, Tour de France, the ITV 4 years. Who plays you, Gary, Pete, and David, and Chris, if you like, and who directs?
Who directs? Well, Gary, you'd have to direct it, wouldn't he? Like, he'd have to direct himself. And the story. So Gary directs it. Yeah. He'd have immense attention to detail. David, you'd be played by, who's the guy from With Nell and I? The South African actor, Richard E. Grant.
Richard E. Grant, yeah, perfect.
I think so. Like, you're not as old, you know. I think Richard E. Grant is in his probably his mid 70s now.
But yeah.
So I don't, you know.
No, I'm taking it.
But you've
fine.
Got, there's something about you. You know, we could, AI, we could, you know, take a few decades off him and bring him down to, you know, mid 40s.
Perfect.
James McAvoy?
Ooh.
I want to be played by James McAvoy.
Okay.
This is quite surprising, but when we're a similar-ish age, I don't think there's too much between us, amazingly. And when he was in Shameless, I bumped into him once in Soho Square, and we both did a kind of like, whoa! You know when you kind of like acts, you like when you meet someone who actually looks quite like you, because very briefly I looked a little bit like James McAvoy.
That's very good.
He's a very good actor. Yeah. So I'll take. And Pete, who'd play Pete? I mean, it's too many. Also, Brad Pitt, isn't it?
Yeah, give him Brad
James
Pitt.
James McAvoy, Richard E. Grant, and Brad Pitt.
That's a
pretty good cast.
That's a great cast. Wonderful casting, Ned. Yeah.
Directed by Gary Imlay.
All right. Next one, Pete.
A bit of Brad Pitt. I'm going to go on the second question after the first one to keep it simple. Ian Newton at Nut Newton. Double points for putting hashtag Ask Ned first before the question. Which Pyrenean or Alpine good. Climb would you like to ride, and who with?
Well, it'd be you two. Nice. I've never been up. The one that we haven't done together is the Col de Peyresourde.
You've always done that independently. It's true.
But it's a the reason I like it is because it's one of those where you just go over the top and it's just got that little shoulder. It's a bit like the Galibier, isn't it? And you drop down the other side. It hasn't got a proper top sort of thing. And there's that iconic... and also, if you come at it from the Luchon side, there's that amazing bit, isn't there, where you get to within about 7K and you can see the last 4K just switching back and switching back and switching back. So that would be a good one. I'd like to do that one with you. Or rather, I'd like to watch you lot. Well, I'd like to watch Pete attack on and the blow. Outskirts of Luchon and blow.
Very good.
Pay your sword.
Okay, this is actually, there's a couple of people, actually there's a few people that reference this, so we'll just get it done in one. This is Louise Bell, at Louise_Bell. Hi, Louise. Ned has expressed concern about GCN's dominance and the impact it might have on free-to-view cycling, e.g. GCN wanting exclusive airing rights. How does he think the landscape will change now GCN closes in December?
Well, yeah, that's slightly misrepresents what I said. There was one moment, there was one article that they wrote that just slightly annoyed me because they didn't credit the fact that me and a journalist called Peter Cossins had actually done this interview with Cav. You know, when I went out to Paris. And I think it's a slight journalistic convention that when it's someone else who's got the quotes for a different outlet, fine, it's in the public domain, those quotes, but you kind of acknowledge that it's not. And they took ownership over it all. Like, you know, GCN, Mark Cavendish told GCN, in brackets, and other members of the media. And I just thought it was a little bit sneaky snoo. So I kind of went, that's what that is based on. So it wasn't a biggie, but maybe it was because I said it and I don't work for GCN, it got taken to be something that's slightly bigger
than
this.
Did anything come up? Did anyone from GCN speak out about the situation or did it just kind of blow up?
No.
No, that was it.
Just blow. Yeah, storming a Twitter teacup, to be perfectly honest. And then it wasn't long after that I think we were all stunned. Well, I remember David posting it on the WhatsApp group to hear that, you know, overnight GCN had basically pulled the pin. And I don't even begin to understand the kind of interweaving dynamics of which company owns what in that ever-changing field of Discovery and Warner Brothers and Eurosport, because it's super complicated, isn't it? But just on a personal level, as a subscriber to GCN, I thought it was an amazing service. I mean, genuinely. And maybe that was a problem. Maybe they just weren't charging enough.
Yeah, because a lot. You're getting a lot of bang for your buck.
A lot, right? It was crazy, paying like £5 a month or something. I don't know, maybe less.
Yeah.
So I have exchanged messages with Rob Hatch in the days following that announcement, and Rob seemed pretty relaxed about it and seemed to be working on the self-evident understanding, I think, that all the commentary jobs that these guys have all been doing, our friends, will continue just on a different streaming platform that consumers will probably be charged a bit more for. So I think it's kind of, I think it's as you were, actually. I think it's pretty much as you were. It's just the branding will change and the cost, I think, will probably go up. But I think there'll be the same range of racing available to the subscriber. But I don't know. I'm not a spokesperson for that. So anyway, I definitely hope that's the case because I think cycling needs to have the breadth of coverage that it has to, you know, enjoyed under GCN. Short-lived though it was only 2 years. It's mad, isn't it?
Mad. The GCN madness.
A form of madness. Yeah.
Interesting question, but I'm not sure if Ned will be able to answer it because... Anyway, let's go for it. It's from Rebecca Fletcher. Is there a piece of commentary you've been really proud of only to find it didn't get broadcast due to an ill-timed ad break or cut from a highlights package?
Actually, that is a really good question because, David, I don't know whether you'll agree with this, but some of the bits of commentary over the last couple of years I remember most vividly that have come out of your mouth or my mouth have often been at moments of the race where there's no action going on. And you and I have been dealing with some of the landscape and historical kind of issues. You know, I think back to that village that was destroyed by the Nazis as they retreated. I can't remember the name. You know, stuff like that, and the Corbusier Chapel and bits and pieces like that, that actually I think I'd like to think we're quite good at.
It's the same with me and Matt Rendell, to be honest. You know, early parts of of the race where not many people are listening, and that's when the best
stuff comes out. And sometimes that's absolutely the best stuff because, you know, when you get to the business end of the race, it's just like it can be a bit painting by numbers.
Yeah.
But that's the stuff that never makes the highlights, ever. It kind of like gets broadcast live.
Yeah, and then it's so true. It's so annoying, isn't it? Sometimes where you've had genuinely kind of great chat about something that's taken us both off guard and we've actually really enjoyed talking about, and then just know that's only going to have been listened or watched by relative few compared to the actual racing highlight show. And it's kind of, and that's one of the weird things as well. I think we are kind of, when we first started doing it, we didn't value that part of the race as much as we've become to. And I think that's it's kind of the way the sport is, isn't it? That was a good question.
Yeah. A really good question.
I tell you what's hard as well, and this to just expand on that, is when I see Ned doing brilliant bits of comms or something, and kind of, and then the director comes on and says, okay, can we do that again, please, Ned? I need another episode, because the images have changed and he wants to capture it again to do kind of the same. Yeah. And there's been times where it's been like three or four times, hasn't it?
Well, that's like, so just so you know, you might hear this in the live broadcast, but like as we're broadcasting live back in London, they're thinking about how to cut the race down for the highlights duration. And they will ask us repeatedly during a live broadcast while we're on air to kind of come in as if we were starting a part on the highlights show. And then they'll change their minds and I'll have to do it exactly the same thing like a minute later. And that is like, well, I always shoot you a glance, don't I, David? Literally, it's quite a physical thing. I have to kind of shrug my shoulders and puff my chest out and go again, because it takes a bit of kind of impetus and thought. And of course, I can't do exactly the same thing. I can't say exactly the same thing. So I might have done it really quite well, but we're still on air with a live show. So I'd just be repeating myself if I did the same thing. So I have to find another way of doing a similar thing without anyone really noticing. It's, yeah. Okay. I'm making the job sound difficult. It's not difficult. It's not difficult.
This is from Novo underscore 1872 at Novo 1872.
Hello, Novo.
Hi, Novo.
Yeah.
I love horse racing and often wonder how a Cheltenham Festival finish would sound if Ned was the commentator. My question is, does Ned ever mute the TV on sports and try his own commentary? If Ned could work a sport he hasn't commented on, which would it be?
Oh, I know. Well, David, you remember hashtag Ask David?
Yeah.
Someone said, if you hadn't been a cyclist, which sport would you have been? Yeah. And you came up with the idea of tennis. I'd like to have been a tennis player. Well, I'm going to say I'd like to be a tennis commentator. Because literally on the telly, it's just foo, 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 winning shot. And then you go, oh, splendid.
That's true. They never commentate.
I'd like to be a pool commentator.
And that's it.
Snooker.
Yeah, they don't say much, do they?
No. So approaching the pink ball, man.
And then you'd have to really know, kind of like Pete.
Goes around the table a bit, taking his time on this shot as he approaches this. As I takes another little two steps, and he's like, okay, now he's about to square up for the pink. Big shot on now. And that's it. It's great. I was watching it the other day as we were playing pool, and I actually had this conversation about different sort of forms of commentary.
Yeah. Yeah, the snooker would be great. But then what about, Pete, because you and me, we're really good at snooker, as we demonstrated to one another in Calais a couple of years ago. But Pete, what about the opening phase where they're just playing safety shots and bringing the white back up to the cushion all the time? You'd have to really know your stuff to call that, though, wouldn't you? Unless you just like do it all like clever with hindsight.
It's so just so calm though, isn't it? It's just,
yeah.
You could find
your way
around.
Oh, so you're right. You don't need to say it. You just go, oh, I say.
Oh, it's beautiful. Set himself up nicely for the next red there. And then like 35 second break. And then it's
says it's so else. True.
It's great.
You can't do it in cycling commentary.
To add to this, sorry, it was about Cheltenham. Do you know enough about horse racing, Ned?
I used to work in a book. Before I got into television, I was I worked in Ladbrokes and I watched a lot of horse racing for about a year. I was a bookies clerk. And I know a lot.
So we're going to hear you call the last couple of fences, huh?
Well, we're working with some new producers next year at the Tour de France, one of whom, I won't name him. I think he listens to this podcast occasionally, is very heavily involved in horse racing.
Ooh.
And the idea has actually been floated that a horse racing commentator from ITV and I might do a bit of a job swap.
Oh, so
potentially, because I think there are a fair amount of similarities.
It would be
actually
hilarious getting a horse and a horse racing commentator to do a bunch sprint. I mean, the problem is, good luck knowing the riders, but they could just bluff it.
Yeah.
Just wing it. Just do the teams. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because every horse, every jockey has a unique. Yeah. It's not like they have teams of eight.
No, exactly. Teams of eight horses. I know.
Big lead out. Just a grand national.
Yeah. A 5-hour lead out.
Peeling off. The horses just peel off one by one.
So good. Oh, that'd be good.
5-hour lead out. Yeah. Imagine if a horse race lasted 5.5 hours.
That'd be brilliant. What's next, Pete?
That's a great question. These are good questions.
They are good questions.
Oh, tennis, though. It's tennis for me. Yeah.
Go on then, Pete. What, if you got the next one?
Oh, I say.
From Will Brown. If you could only choose one medium for the rest of your career, would it be written, spoken, or filmed?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I think, and I probably, I don't know if this will come as a surprise, but actually it won't, because I think I've spoken about it to you guys, but I think I get the deepest satisfaction out of writing. And if I don't want to lose any of them. I love doing all of them, but if I had to just choose one, it would be the written word, I think. Partly because of the economy of it. When I go off and film a documentary or something, you know, there's sound engineers, there's camera people, you have to wait for the light and the conditions, and if it's raining, you can't do it, and then you have to wait for that person to... When I'm writing a book, I just take a notebook and a pen, and that's it. And it's nice. I like the stripped-down kind of thing of it. Yeah, so writing.
Here's a good one.
What's next? Yeah.
From Paul at PaulC199. Has to ask Ned. Hello. Ned, what's your favourite brand of budget hotel in France and why?
No.
Pete's just like,
only one answer.
I mean, I don't know why I'm even thinking here.
Why are you even thinking?
Well, I was trying to think beyond Campanile.
No, there's no beyond.
No.
To see if there was like something I'd forgotten, because I think, I rapidly dismissed Baladin and Kyriad.
Yeah, gone.
They're off the scale. I think on the Tour de France, we've only once stayed in a Formula, and that was depressing.
That's awful, yeah.
Ibis Styles, in theory, should be like slightly better than a Campanile, but yet it's patchy, isn't it? It's like...
Campanile's just safe. Oh, Campanile's almost got to the point of being...
So it's a Campanile.
Kind of
iconic.
Vintage nostalgic as well. Ibis and that have got a bit too kind of 21st century nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
They've gone
too
modern, haven't they?
Like IKEA, like a crap IKEA. Yeah. Whereas Campanile, it's still exactly the same.
Remember when we took the chairs onto the balcony net this year?
In the tour. That was great. Overlooking the atrium.
The car park.
Stars. Yeah. It was perfect, wasn't it? And we had our neighbours across the way on their balcony.
Yeah, the families checking in. Do you remember with the kids?
Yeah.
And then they were all checking in and we would just sit there like staring at them across the atrium, like making up stories about them and kind of a bit like Jimmy Stewart from Rear Window. But even down to the keys, you know, like a Campanile key, can you imagine?
I can almost feel it in my hand, right? See it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Little slot and card.
Yeah.
Little punch card.
Little perforation. Little punch card.
Yeah. Right, you'll go, Pete.
And the noise the blind makes.
Oh, it's just magical.
Perfection. Okay. Owen Williams at Fleming Owen. Anyway, if Ned could have been a pro cyclist. Not what I'm saying. Yeah, anyway. If Ned could have been a pro cyclist and could, because it's like asking you, you know, it's like he's asking me. But anyway, and could have raced on a team with Pete or David, that's not the question.
Oh, I see.
That's not the question. Which team would he have joined and what would his role have been? #, ask Ned.
So I don't quite understand. Am I on a team? So do I have to
sign
you to my
team?
One
of our teams. Is it one of our teams?
It's one of your teams.
With Pete or David, which team? Okay, fair enough. Yeah, could have raced on a team with Pete or David. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
I understand. Yeah. Okay, that makes more. At first, when I just briefly read it, I was like, any team. But yeah, on a team with. So it has to be one of our teams we race for. What team would it be?
well.
And what would your role have been within the team?
Okay, so until I realized, understood the question correctly and realized I could only restrict it to the teams that you raced for, I was going to say I would like to have been, I could see myself as being an incredibly underpowered and borderline useless early mountain domestique for Gerold Steiner.
Like, oh, nice.
Maybe play a bit of a role in the Vosges Mountains.
That would be brilliant. Bayern Rundfahrt.
Getting a break and...
A good day in Bayern Rundfahrt.
Yeah, one or two. But yeah, maybe pick up some points on stage 13 in the Vosges Mountains on a Cat 3 climb. Something like that. But then when I realised I had to pick... So obviously I'm not going to be Team Sky. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to be Team Sky.
Coffee-dis,
so, Pete, it has to be.
Oh my god!
It's got to be Bora. No, I'm definitely going Coffee-dis. I'll come to that in a second. But Pete, it's Bora Hansgrohe, because basically they're like a turbocharged Gerold Steiner. But you know, I wouldn't make the Tour de France team, obviously. And again, with Coffee-dis, David, I'm going Coffee-dis.
Yeah, of course.
But
you are.
I'd be there. I'd be the first person to put my hand in the air for like the Grand Prix Marseillaise and the Étoile de Bessèges,
yeah, Cholet,
and all that.
The Coupe de France.
Yeah. But by March, I'd have like absolutely blown a gasket, and it would just be. If you looked at my pro cycling stats page, it would just be DNF, DNF, yeah, DNS, all the way down the line like that.
I'd have been that guy with who brings the bottles up to David and the tour for Cofidis and like wants to have a conversation
not
with
good
him.
Enough.
David just doesn't care.
He's not here to no, talk
I do,
to
but
me.
I do that. I do that at Paris-Nice. I do that at Paris-Nice. Like, yeah. I DNF stage 4. Like, but for the first few days, I'd be doing that.
Gloves off and just giving them to you. It's like,
yeah, okay. Exactly. David, not even looking at you. Yeah. Don't lose them.
Call me by the wrong name. You'd probably call me by the wrong name. Yeah. I'd be Gerard, yeah, and you'd call me Jerome.
Yeah, completely. He's so good.
And also, I'd have only got the. I'd have had a 2-year contract with Cofidis that I only got because my uncle was quite a player in the Vendée or something like that, and you know, had connections to the management. And it was obvious after 2 or 3 months it wasn't going to get renewed, and that'd be it. I'd be amateur after. I'd have 2 years as a pro with Cofidis.
And you'd still be like.
It's quite detailed, isn't it?
Walk. So this is going
great question.
As far away from that as possible. Dean S. Lacohi.
Hi, Dean.
At Lokai.com, yeah. Whatever you call it. Dear Ned, what was the favourite role you played or the favourite play you acted in during your time at the ADC in Cambridge?
Oh, that's niche knowledge about
isn't
my background,
it?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It was probably there's a great contemporary British playwright called Jez Butterworth who wrote Jerusalem, The Ferryman, and Mojo, and he's probably our greatest living playwright. And I performed in the first thing he ever wrote.
Oh wow!
At university, and I remember him coming and introducing himself to me, and I was massively under impressed and underwhelmed.
And
he said,
"Please don't ever do that again."
Yeah. So it was that, and it was an adaptation of a cookbook. Cookery book, and he'd made a story about all the characters who were cooking the recipes. It's very good. Yeah, so that, there you go.
There you
good
go.
Question, Dean.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Our partner is AG1. AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that delivers comprehensive nutrients to support whole body health. I've now been taking AG1 for nearly a year, just over actually, coming up to the anniversary. It has been in direct correlation with my increase in health and fitness. It has become my atomic habit. It's what I do to start every day. It is one scoop in water, dissolves so easily, and there you have it. AG1 replaces your multivitamin, probiotic, and more in one simple, drinkable habit. Science-driven formulation of vitamins, probiotics, and whole food-sourced nutrients. Every scoop is packed with 75 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and whole food-sourced ingredients of high quality. They give me major benefits like gut and mood support, boosted energy, and even healthier-looking skin, hair, and nails. I've been traveling non-stop the past couple of months, actually. Actually, it feels like 6 months. But during that whole time, it has been simple. I've just been using my daily travel packs. It avoids taking lots of different things that in the past meant I just stopped taking everything. With AG1, it is literally how I start every day. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. That's drinkag1.com/neverstraysfar. Check it out. Back to the show.
Okay, Elizabeth.
Yeah. Are we going to do? Are we going to do a couple more or what?
You've got loads.
Yeah, at least a couple more. I think they're great.
We've got loads.
Elizabeth Mallet, M-A-L-L-E-T-T.
Sorry.
Malay,
Malay. I can't judge whether or not this is interesting because I'm.
No, it is interesting. It is. It really is. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which authors have
that was almost annoying actually. Yeah. Pete almost annoyed me there with that. Ooh, no, ooh. It really is. But he, as I say, he can't annoy me. So there you go.
Right.
Go
on, Pete. Which authors have influenced you, and ooh, the wonderful nice. Way you recount your experiences? Full stop. Your ride to the darts on your bike should have been incredibly dull, but I found it compelling. What is the witchcraft? #Hashtag Ask Ned.
Oh, that's very kind
that's
of you.
Very good. Elizabeth Mallet.
That's do you know the weirdest thing about the last pod when I rode to Minehead?
Yeah.
The weirdest thing is a couple of people on the Twitter, and I didn't understand what they were talking about, said, "Oh, are you recreating In Pursuit of Spring by Edward Thomas?" And I went,
"I have no idea what you're talking about.
Because two or three people said it, I then looked into it and found out that in 1913...
Are you joking?
A poet called Edward Thomas set off on his bicycle in 1913 to ride from South London, a couple of miles from my house, to finish in Minehead.
No.
It, like, almost exactly the same journey in almost exactly the same number of days. So I'm halfway through reading the book now, and I think what I'm going to do is, he set off on March the 21st. It's called In Pursuit of Spring. So he's trying to find spring, evidence of spring in the English countryside through Hampshire and Wiltshire and, you know, Somerset. And I think if I've got the free time, which I think I have, on March the 21st he set off, and I think next year on March the 21st I'm going to do it again, but this time I'm going to go exactly where, village by village, where Edward Thomas went in 1913. That's 111 cool. years ago. So that's a bit nuts. No, I enjoyed doing that. Thank you for listening. But it was just, I was just describing what I see. And if the other answer to that part of that question, and I think as a stylist, as a technician, I think the greatest writer I've been reading recently, he's not my favourite writer. There are many, many other, mostly women actually, who I admire at the moment much more. As writers of fiction, but I think one of the greatest technicians as a writer is Ernest Hemingway, and I would love to be able to write with his absolute economy, and say as much as he does with very few words. I think that's a real skill. So Hemingway is my I don't compare myself even slightly with Hemingway, but if I could be a writer, I'd be Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I admire the most. Mm. Yeah, yeah. What about you, David? Who do you admire as a kind of writer?
Yeah, that's hard as well, because it is. It's like, as you say, your moods and things change.
Mm.
I don't know, at least I used to love that. I liked Hemingway and I liked the kind of, the American kind of, Cormac McCarthy I loved back in the day, because I just, hardcore sort of American literature,
yeah,
kind of deep overly wrought stuff. But yeah, I recently, I don't know, I'd have to have a real proper think about that. I'm kind of a bit of a black spot, but yeah, Hemingway's just a classic, brilliant,
yeah,
matches your style as traveling. And on that note, Ned, here's a good one. Actually, this is totally kind of random, actually. Because I don't know if you have it. From Nick Reed at Nickin Masham. Is there a blind spot sport which you would like to know more about and maybe do a little coverage of?
I was once, Jim Rosenthal, the ITV anchor from back in the day, once asked me if it would be all right with him if they could he could recommend that I joined ITV's Formula One team.
Yeah! So
for a while I thought I was going to be sent on across the world all year doing motor racing. And it, for one reason or another, it didn't happen, but partly because I had lots of other commitments at ITV, but it was almost going to happen at one point. And I think they came to that conclusion because of what I'd done in my early years on cycling, where I'd sort of like arrived as an outsider, and then the viewers had kind of been on the journey with me, and they thought it would be a way of making Formula One a bit more accessible to sort of, you know, that they send an outsider into the sport. And so your friend and mine, Richard Williams, is talking about writers you admire.
Oh, he's amazing.
David, I've never quite, you've got a great deal of passion for motorsport.
I love it. Not modern motorsport.
I'm not kind of, I'm sort of fascinated by it. So I would have, and I know nothing about it. So definitely that over golf. I think we can agreed. Definitely say that over golf. Yeah.
How's you, Pete?
Okay. Bear with me.
There are so many good ones. Can I just say,
before I forget, that we're very hard up against a deadline for getting your road books ordered for Christmas. And
mine's at the post office here.
NSF 2023 code still applies to all road books in our range. All of them are £10 off. And we've just discovered in the stock room there are very few signed 2022 and 2021 editions there as well. So if you haven't got them, get £10 off, get a signed edition.
Oh, get amongst NSF it. That's a perfect Christmas present. Just spending Christmas Day go. Just leafing through that. Oh, dreamy.
Perfect. Absolutely. I received mine from Ned actually yesterday.
Cool.
And it's very luxurious, isn't it?
It's nice, isn't it?
It's nice. Do you know what? There's something about them that's slightly addictive. I'm starting to get it.
Hey!
This one felt, I don't know why, but you know, the first one, I was like, all right, that's kind, that's nice. It's a nice book and all. Yeah. And then each year it's become more, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
The first thing you do is you just have to put it next to the other ones. It's weird, isn't it? You just got to slot it in. And like, so anyway, whatever. So what have we got? Ask Ned.
We've got one from Fran Miller. Not sure
Fran
who
Miller.
She is.
Oh, no.
But if anyone wants to give her a follow, it's at Fran Miller. Definitely heard the name before, but I just don't know where. if you were going about your normal day, how many owls would you have to see before you thought something was wrong?
That is, to be fair, I gave Fran a bit of a hard time about the question she posed for David, which was, what was it, David? It was ducks, a duck-sized like horse.
Yeah, exactly, or a horse-sized duck. Or a
horse-sized duck. Would you prefer to fight them? I thought it was a bit lame, but that is actually quite a good question, though, Fran. How many owls? All right, can we all play this?
Yeah, I've already done it.
Think of a number. Think of a number and let's see if we're in the same ballpark.
Okay, I've got mine.
I just need to think this through.
I know what mine is. Yeah. You go first.
I'll go first because I'm supposed to be answering it.
Yeah.
Four owls.
Four. That's one owls. One too many for me. Three, I'm done.
Because
three things are going weird.
But see, all right, what do you say, Pete? I can justify my four thing.
Maybe six.
That's a lot of owls, Pete.
That's a lot.
I'd be
owls.
Unsure if it was the same owl though. I'd see him.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't considered that. It's a really good point. Genius point.
It's a genius point.
So you've just seen the same owl.
So the first two or three, you're like, you're just not sure if it was the same owl. So you're letting that just go by. Four, you're starting to think, I better pay closer attention. Five, like, no, that was a different out to that fourth one.
And
he's
still travelling by this
Oh,
point.
No. This is really weird. I'm still not 100% those first four were different, but
Just that element of doubt has crept in now. It's unsettling.
That's Pete's every day. It's like he has to get to six for Pete to start to think things are weird.
Five. No, that could be okay.
No, five
hours.
Five's
that
okay.
Could be fine.
5 hours.
Because it's
fine.
Just the same guy and he's circled round. So that's six. I don't know anymore.
Go on, yeah. Four then. Why four?
See, you again?
Why four? Because, well, we've often discussed the magic number of three, haven't we? The Trinity thing.
Yeah.
Well, so if I'd seen, if I saw 3 hours, I'd go, yeah, there's a natural order to that. That kind of like, I get that. Yeah. This is the world we live in, the Trinity. So that totally makes sense. There's very, very unlikely to go beyond three because that's just rounded. There's another one!
Okay.
There's another one. That has broken the law of nature now. That's when I start to get worried. Yeah?
That is
so
very true.
That's it. It's a deviant number, isn't it? Four. You don't.
Four is. It's like a seven.
It's not a kind of number
that's useless.
No, seven's the number that everyone picks.
I know, because it's useless.
Because it
means nothing.
Pick a number between zero and 10. Everyone goes seven.
That's why you got to say, you've got to pick a number between zero and 10. You're not allowed seven. And then that completely screws people.
But no one would say four.
No.
No one's going to go four. It's just a weird.
Yeah, true.
You wouldn't do it.
That's true, actually. Four is pretty weird as well. Oh, there you go then. So three, four, six. Yeah. I mean,
I think Pete wins that, actually.
Totally.
Before we move on from Fran Miller, I had on about my dreams again, and I thought I was getting over them. Last night, vivid as you like, swear down, Fran had managed to speak to Bell staff and create a team that was for me. And it was like my last chance. And she was like, you realise if you mess this up, it's over. And I was like, no, I'm fully committed, fully committed. And I woke up and I was like, am I ready for this? Like, am I ready to go back? And I was like, oh my God, it was a dream again.
Oh, Pete. Oh, no.
Did you tell her?
Awful. No, I haven't told her yet, no.
Oh, she'll listen to this. Did
she build the team around you? Were you like the star signing and all that?
Well, it was in my dream, and in my head it was, basically. Because in my dreams, I'm always like so much better than I ever was.
Oh, Pete, I love how deep you're... But no, subliminally, like your conscious, your deep conscious knows how good you are. It's just you wake up and then you just let it go again.
Yeah.
So deep down, it's there. It's so just deep. You've just got to let it out. Let it free.
Was it one of those where the dream just lived with you, just dragged into your morning a little bit? And was it quite hard to shake off, that one? You know, like, or did you just dismiss it fairly?
It's happened so many times now that it's... past that point.
A couple of years ago, that would have unsettled you.
It was like standard, like water off a duck's back. The sixth dream, I thought it was weird. And now I'm on like the 206th. I'm kind of just like, whatever. Go on with it.
Off a horse-sized duck.
Here's a good one from Dave Corlett at Mr. C64. Nice. If you could be a pro cyclist, what would you want to excel in? Climber, sprinter, classics, and why? Cheers.
I wouldn't want to do the Ardennes. Like, you know those kind of guys who go, yeah, I see myself as not maybe a climber for the
Ardennes, place. You know.
So because no one cares about the Ardennes. No. By the time the Cobble Classics have been and gone, everyone goes, yeah, I can't be bothered to watch the Flesh Vallon.
Oh, he's came into form, has he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's thinking about the Giro.
So you don't want to be a climber classics rider.
No.
Dan Martin. I mean,
you know. With respect, Dan. No, but he won Lombardia, which is a bit harder to. And he won stages,
that's a
big mountain stages in the Tour.
Yeah.
But I think I'd have to. It's an unrealistic.
No, this is dreamy. This is dreamy. It's like, do you want to be like a Mark Cavendish? Okay, do you want to be at the sharp end, battling out Philipson and Cav? Do you want to be in the high mountains, like dancing on the pedals next to?
It's Roubaix.
Nice.
You know, imagine winning Paris-Roubaix. It's Paris-Roubaix. I'd be Cobble Classics. I'd be Belgian. I'd be Ned van Bolting. I'd come from Ippingham.
Yeah, that's from Bolton.
I'd be Belgian. I'd be totally happy being Belgian as
you
well.
You would be. You'd love
it. Like, because...
The simplicity
of
it.
Because, you know, David, my, my much vaunted lack of style and dress sense, I think, would stand out far less in Belgium.
Completely.
I could just cruise around being normal and, yeah, you know,
just not really caring about your appearance.
I look a bit Belgian.
Yeah.
I look
yeah.
a bit like Laurent, an older Lawrence Hoos, you know? I yeah. mean, I kind of like, I could pass as Belgian if you just got sort of a screenshot of me. Pete yeah. couldn't. He looks Spanish, no. but I could.
Yeah.
But isn't there it funny, classic, like you just mentioned yeah. there, no one cares about the Ardennes after the classics. They'll only care about the Giro, but then no one cares about the Giro once the Giro's done because it's the Tour, and it's like, oh my, everyone forgets how good the Tour is when the Giro's on. It's like, when the Tour comes down, it's like, oh my, this is where cycling
God.
Is at. But the one race, the one race that survives it all is Lombardia, because it's like the last race and everyone just goes
yeah.
goes into their off season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so true. Makes I got my that. Race program through for RCS. I'm going back to Lombardia and Gran Piemonte.
Oh, happy days.
Doing Milano Torino this year as well, which is good. I like that.
Actually, on that theme, anyway. I'm just going to jump in. This is from Rebecca at Becky Cath. If you could be a DS for a Tour de France team, which team would you choose and who would be on it?
Okay. Let me flip this around. You guys know the peloton very well. Where do you see me fitting in culturally better, best? If you have to place me as a DS into one of these teams, where do you think I'd go?
Movistar. Just so, no, seriously. Super laid back.
Movistar.
Kind of
just
like
laid back.
Good, great, really nice people.
Traditionalists.
Just traditional.
They'd be interested in your stories.
Yeah, they'd love chat. Art. They love sitting around the dinner table. They just got good vibes.
With Max. Peppermint teas.
With Max. Can you think about it, being on a race with Max?
You
and Max would kill it, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, and I like wearing blue.
And I don't think they give the riders any instructions. You know, it's just like, there's a start line, guys. See you later.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're pretty laid back. Yeah.
I'd have to look after Nairo Quintana. I'd have to be Nairo Quintana's guy. He's gone back.
That's all right, no, because then you just bring in your friend Matt Rendell.
Yeah, get Rendellero. Yeah. Yeah. I'd have to smuggle him in the back, though, wouldn't I?
Yeah, you would, actually.
Like, you know, I'd have to open windows at the back of the hotel.
Good luck smuggling
in
Matt Rendell anywhere.
knocking over coffee tables.
Oh, so good.
Putting his foot in the kettle as he walks into the hotel room. Very good. Very good. Yeah.
All right, we'll do two
good
more
questions.
We've got like loads. By the way, just,
two more. Yeah, let's do two
just
more.
Just give a homage to John France, who we didn't mention, who did actually mention the Minehead and the Edward Thomas book. So sorry, John, missed your question.
Yeah,
before.
A few people did, but that's amazing. Thank you for all of you who pointed that out to me, because it's really interesting.
Okay, Brian Hill.
Really interesting.
Next up.
Hello, Brian.
What did you think of Pete and David when they were pros? When they were pros and you had to ask them a question before you got to know them. So what did you think of Pete and David before they were pros, and if you had to ask them a question before you got to know them?
That's a brave question, Pete.
I think very different.
It's not my question, David.
I know.
It's Brian Hill.
Unless you got a fake burner account on Twitter and you're called Brian Hill.
Just set it all up for this moment.
I think I was... how am I going to say this? David, you were very approachable from the moment that I could understand, and I did understand that it was a bit of an ordeal for you and you weren't very interested in talking to me for a good few years, but you never really kind of let it show. And so I have never been scared of asking you a question or kind of like had to back off or even, you know. So that was always very comfortable. You were like pulling on a cardigan for me.
Warm,
like comfortable cardigan. Pete, I was just massively in awe of. Yeah, still am a bit. Because you were quite distant. You were very much wrapped up in, it felt like, the team bus felt like a much more of a distinct bubble. And you seemed less aware of what was going on outside that team bus than David was, maybe. So, and I knew that the reputation that you'd arrived with, you know, when you were signed for that team, I'd heard all the stories about how amazingly good you were, and I was kind of in awe of you. And I remember the first time, Pete, that I got a sense of who you actually were was when, not that you aren't all those things, by the way, but the bigger picture, was when after you won the Tour of Austria in that summer, when you'd been excluded from the Tour de France team, and you felt like you had a bit of a thing to say, and you know, you and I didn't know each other very well, but you took my call and you used the opportunity of a reasonably trusted and friendly journalist, I think, who gave you the platform to go on air and kind of have your say. And I thought, actually, I've got a lot of time for that, because I think the easiest thing for sports people is not to stir the pot or not to express yourself honestly ever, because it's just easier not to. And I think that you didn't say it unreasonably, you didn't say it in an unmeasured way. It was incredibly articulate and probably quite accurate as well. And I thought, oh yeah, Pete's actually does understand how to play this game and sort of the relationships that work and the dynamics. And that was the first time that kind of I became aware of that. So very different characters. You were much harder to read, Pete, than David was, to be honest. And now you're both impossible. I've got no idea what's going on in your heads.
Yeah,
does that make sense? Are you happy? Have I offended either of you with that?
No, it's lovely. It's always comforting
just like
to hear us.
The ever-evolving personalities and stories, aren't they, with all three of us, I think, because the odd time I've gone on a YouTube sort of rabbit hole, and one of the times was when Swanny Duvall, so was that 2008 Tour de France?
Yeah, 2007.
Ned, you were with that crazy guy doing your bit. You were doing these mad videos. Like,
was
it
I?
Was almost...
Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, have you not...
I can't remember.
You must seriously, and David, were you in the polka dot jersey or you were trying to take...
Yeah, that's 2007. Yeah.
And yeah, 2007 it was then, Ned. And you were with this guy going up to the team buses trying to get interviews with people, and you were doing this like off the cuff, like really funny videos. And I can't remember his name.
Oh, God, I vaguely remember that, yeah.
And because I'd spent, and because it was last year, and I'd spent obviously 4 years commentating with you guys and know you as who you are, and David's on this bus and he's got this kind of demeanor and he's like, just trying to do this, I'm trying to do that. And it's like, yeah, give me 1 second. And because we know each other as who we are now, it's like, it was so bizarre. But that's, every person in life just constantly evolves into a I wouldn't say a better version of themselves, but it's always changing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So not and who you interviewed me as back then is who I am now, and the same with both of you as well, I guess.
Yeah, and we rub off on each other as well, don't we? Like, you influence each other just by sheer number of hours we spend talking to one another in each other's company. Yeah.
All right, this is a nice final question.
Wow, that was quite deep. That was quite intense.
Yeah, that was quite...
Go on.
Just
was interested, go and search for those videos of Ned, because they're brilliant. 2007
Tour de France. 2007 Tour de France. Okay, to conclude, this is from Rebecca. No, not this one. Chris Tate, sorry. I think we've already done that Rebecca one. At Yorkshire Enigma. What's your favourite part of a Tour de France stage day?
Whew.
Surely it's just waking up and remembering you're at the Tour de France, Ned.
Lunch.
Not always.
Lunch is always good.
Lunch. It's lunch.
Yeah.
It's lunch.
Lunch is
kind
quite
of
good,
pretty
isn't
much
it?
Every day, isn't it? Why is it so important? It just, you know, an army marches on its stomach and all that. There's something, you know, when you're far from home and the day is long and the door is longer.
And it's always a nice kind of surprise. We kind of go there a little bit kind of looking forward to what they've put on for us that day.
Totally, but it's such good food, and we're always there quite early. Yeah. And also, so there's a little there's
some random,
there's a little, sometimes
random
we,
mingling.
And we go there. Sometimes we go there together, but more often than not, we kind of go separately or in twos or threes or ones. And then, yeah, if you go on your own, there's that slight frisson of, ooh, who am I going to sit next to?
That's what you're like now. Pete and I are trying to avoid people.
Heads down.
Pete and I are like, don't talk to anybody. Don't no eye contact.
I'll dive in.
No eye contact.
Occasionally I'll dive in and have a bit of an Anthony McCrossan day, you know, a little bit with the ASO.
So true. It's like I always laugh whenever we go, Ned's just deep in with another table in like heavy conversation, having a chat, finding out about the Tour de France.
Yeah.
I'm happy to sit on my own, cap down.
Yeah. Oh, I'll have to bear that in mind.
I just want to enjoy my dinner. Like, we have to speak all day. I'm like, I just don't want to talk about cycling to anyone right now. I just want to enjoy this one moment that I have to myself.
Oh, it's like, oh no, Jens is coming. Oh no, Jens is going. Jens is coming. Jens is coming. Jens is coming.
Jensy. Yeah, Jensy got to take cover. But the worst, no, the worst one, guys, the worst one is not actually a lunchtime thing. It's a it's a breakfast thing, and it's in the breakfast area in the hotel. Oh. It's I'm afraid to say it, but it's Matt Rendell, isn't it?
I think Matt's quite a safe, let's say, safety Matt.
He can, you know, go deep. It's always, you get the drama,
not,
don't
not
you?
Not a breakfast. No. Breakfast, it is wall-to-wall Tour de France. And he doesn't even say good morning. It's no, the papers. First thing he'll say. It's just bang. Because he's been gestating all this stuff about the Tour de France for 12 hours and he hasn't had an outlet in his hotel room to say any of it out loud. And so it's just bam. And he's got all the papers in front of him as well, yeah. Hasn't he? And I can't see, I can't be doing the Tour de France at 8:30 in the morning. That comes a bit later. Wow. I miss it. I'm looking forward to it.
That's a good way to finish. Just put
I'm
your back
forward to it.
Just quickly on what I was saying, it was 2013, Ned, and it was Dave's shoddy interviews.
Oh.
Anyone who's interested, oh, yeah. Get on YouTube, because yeah. They are funny.
That does ring a bell. Yeah, yeah.
I love that you're trying to downplay them as if they never happened.
Put it on the group, Pete. Can't
remember. No, it's brilliant, honestly.
Well, there we go. Oh, thanks, Ned. That was all a good right. Ask, Ned.
Thank you.
Thank you to our Twitter people, huh? That's a really good question.
Sorry to all the people who didn't answer. We were just randomly going through there because we're remote. So it's the easiest way to do it was just to bounce them out. But thank you for all the questions.
So maybe squeeze another pod out before Christmas just to get an update on how the Christmas trees are bedding in the Kenyuk house.
Ooh, yeah.
We'll see.
Definitely.
Yeah. We can do that. Little review of the year. Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right.
See you guys.
See ya. Bye. See ya.
Cheers. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.